for tonight, Emily D. from San Francisco.
Hi, my name's Emily. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. Oh my God, it's so amazing to be here. Whew. Yeah, I don't know about melt your faces off with my spirituality, but I'm gonna try. We are not a glum lot. It's really, really, really amazing to be at an event with so many young people. And I wanna thank the host committee for working for an entire year to put together an amazing conference. So, yeah, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like and how I got to AA and what my life is like now. So I'm just going to go for it. I grew up in Ohio. I saw you lone Ohioan over there. Yep. I grew up in Ohio, and I grew up in a family. I grew up in like a, I don't know, kind of normal middle class suburban neighborhood. But there was the kind of lineage of alcoholism going on. So my grandparents would come to visit, and some grandparents bring their kids, their grandkids, gifts. And my grandparents would bring handles of vodka and limes. My kind of grandparents. Yeah, it was really crazy. Growing up in my family, there was a lot of crazy stuff happening inside what looked like a perfect outside. And I was really sensitive and really uncomfortable. I have an older brother who was totally out of control. And I wanted out. I really wanted out. And I was kind of obsessed with being the bad girl. So, I know. Yeah. So I really wanted to try drugs. I think I was 12 or 13. But it was really hard to get drugs when you're 12 or 13, at least before you really get into the drugs. So I settled on Vivarin, which is caffeine pills. Yes. And I went to a party, it was a New Year's party, and I took 13 Vivarin. Yeah. Yeah. I know, this was before Red Bull. I was like way ahead of my time. And I was sick for probably 3 days, like throwing up for a really long time after that. And the conclusion for me was I have to find better drugs and alcohol because Vivarin isn't gonna cut it. So I kind of started to spiral out a little bit. And by the end of my 13th year, I hadn't yet found better drugs or alcohol, and I was really, really depressed, and I hated my family, and I hated everybody, and I wanted to kill myself. And I felt pretty serious about that, actually. And I had a guidance counselor who told my parents that I should go to the psych ward, which I was not stoked about. And I wish I could tell you that is the only time I've been to the psych ward, but that wouldn't be true. Yes. So I went to the psych ward when I was 13, and I was there for 2 weeks, and I hated everybody there, and there was a quiet room in the psych ward, and I would get sent to the quiet room, and I would not be quiet in the quiet room. But the thing that stands out most for me when I was in the psych ward is that the chemical dependency unit was right upstairs, and we would pass each other in the hallway on the way to activities. And I remember thinking, those are the kids that I want to hang out with when I get out of here. And so that's what I did. I got out of the psych ward, and I think within a week, I did LSD for the first time. And I watched the movie The Doors, which I... But you shouldn't watch that movie when you're taking LSD. Because at the end, Jim Morrison is dead in the bathtub, and it's a really bad scene. Yeah, it was really disturbing. So the take-home lesson for me from that was that that wasn't the right drug for me. And that really, ultimately what happened is that I found alcohol. And alcohol was the perfect puzzle piece for my brain. It fit me perfectly. And all of that discomfort that I had and all of the all of the awkward feelings and all of the sadness and grief about my family and hating who I was, it all went away when I started drinking. And it was fun for a while, but it was blackouts from the beginning, for sure. And as a young woman blackout alcoholic, there were a lot of consequences that came along with not knowing what I was doing. And that was a big part of my story, honestly, was I would go out, and on the nights when I didn't intend to get wasted, and I went out, I would certainly get wasted, but on the nights when I really intended to get wasted, it was over. And I'd wake up the next day, you know, somewhere strange with someone strange, having no idea what had happened, but actually knowing exactly what had probably happened, and feeling really full of shame, really, really full of shame. And that shame just kind of compounded and piled up on itself over years of doing this. And I mean, and I'd wake up and I'd say, I'm not gonna do this again. Like, I'm not going to do this again. And then the afternoon would roll around and everyone was getting dressed up to go out and put on their outfit. And it sounded fun. So I kept at that for a really long time. And you know, I like to drink and drive. Because I think I'm in control of everything, and that's something that I've maintained through my sobriety. God is slowly wresting my grip away, but I totally thought that I was capable of driving, even though I was usually in a blackout. And the way I would manage to drive was to, because I couldn't do too many things at once, so I would put the car on cruise control so I could just do the steering wheel and drive on the freeway in a blackout. And that was effective for a long time. It's really a miracle. I mean, I love being in a room where we can all laugh about how hilarious it is driving in a blackout, but it's really it's really a miracle that I'm here, and it's really a miracle that I didn't kill somebody else with my behavior in a lot of ways, but particularly with my driving. So eventually I got a DUI, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't have a lot of time, so we're just going to have to fast forward to me getting sober. I got a DUI, there were lots of consequences, and I don't know, I had a moment of clarity. I was in the jail cell, and I thought to myself, how did you get here? Like, what are you doing here? This is not your life, and it was my life. It was my life, and so I realized that, and it was suggested to me, that maybe I had a problem with alcohol. And so I came to an AA meeting. I was living in Nashville, Tennessee at the time. Nashville. Yep. So I came to this meeting at 2:02, and I love that there are people here from 202. I came to this meeting, and I was in my car, and the meeting started at 5, and it was 4:55, and I watched the minutes tick away, and I said, when the clock hits 5, you are getting out of this car, and you are walking into that meeting. And it was the bravest thing I have ever done, was to walk into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never been so scared. I had my hood up, and I was crying, and I went upstairs. You could still smoke there. This was in 2003. And that's Tennessee for you. So I went up to the meeting, and I was crying, and there was this old cowboy in the meeting, and he said, "Newcomer, we hear your tears." And I was like, I am not in the right place. Like, no. But I was so, my heart was hurting so bad, and I had nowhere else to go. And this little old lady, she came and she sat next to me, and she put her arm around me, and she said, "It's gonna be okay." I didn't know her, I didn't know anything about her, and that simple action was the hand of AA, and it saved my life. And I think that's, you know, we never know the things that we say or do that save somebody's life. And she probably has no idea that that small kindness at that moment made a huge difference in the rest of my life, essentially. Yeah. But despite that, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So there was that. But I worked with this amazing woman. I was crying after my first meeting, and I said, what about the champagne toast at my wedding? I was like already way out in the future. And she said, honey, if you keep drinking, you're not going to have a wedding. I know. It's true. I kind of plodded through those first several months just hating AA, and it was February of 2003 and I was 21, and I thought my life was over. Everyone I went to meetings with in Nashville for the most part was like more than double my age. And so my sponsor said to me, I want you to make a list of 20 fun things to do sober that aren't illegal and don't involve sex. And I was like, 20? D-Bone's house. I can't believe that you still are saying that. It's amazing. It warms my heart. I don't even know who you are. As a sidebar, I came to my first Young People's Conference when I was a year sober, and it was so incredible to see. It was like MTV Spring Break minus the alcohol. But after I got sober, there were some things that I had, things about myself that I had not been willing to look at when I was drinking. And I was living in DC at the time. I've moved around a lot in sobriety, which is great. So people get to clap about all these places I lived in. So I lived in DC, and I went with some people. They were going to this gay club. And so I went... So I go to this club, and this girl is standing there, and she says to me, because I'm like awkward and standing by the wall, and she looks at me and she goes, are you gay? And I was like, no. And then I gave her my number. Which came as quite a shock to me as it probably did to her. And that was the beginning of like, oh my God, oh my God. I was like, really, God? I'm an alcoholic and I'm a lesbian? And God was like, really? Really? But man, it was tough. Like I had a different, I was so wrapped up in wanting people to like me and had like wanting to look good and all of this stuff, and it was not my plan. And I struggled. I struggled so much. And I came, one of my kind of living amends to my mom was to both my parents, was to let them know me, because they didn't get to know me when I was drinking. My mom came to visit and I told her that I was gay. And she looked at me and she said, how could you do this to me? You're never gonna walk down the bridal staircase of my house. Which is actually quite funny, but it was not funny at the time. And I didn't know, I mean, I was a year sober and I didn't know what to do. And it was midnight, it was 11:30 in downtown DC, and I went to a meeting. I went to a gay meeting in DC, and I cried, and the people of AA were there. The people of AA were there, and they were showing me, by the way that they were living, how to be who I really am. And I feel like that's a huge part of what I've gotten in sobriety, is I have really become what I believe is God's will for me. I have become authentic, and that's completely priceless. So a lot's changed in the last 8 years or so that I've been sober. There's been ups, there have been downs. I have an amazing partner who's here. It was a case of girl meets girl on AA campus. Um, You know, and on the days when things are hard, because I'm not one of those people that's going to say, you get sober and everything's amazing, because that has not been the case for me. Everything has not been amazing. There have been hard times. But when things are hard, there are tools, there are steps, there are meetings, there is fellowship. And I'm able to walk through that stuff now in a way that I fundamentally couldn't do when I was drinking. So I'm 29. And this is the last thing I'll say. I'm 20. I know. I don't look a day over 19. So I'm 29, and I don't remember my 20th birthday. I don't remember the beginning of this decade of my life. I was in a blackout. I was in a literal blackout, and I was in a spiritual and emotional blackout. And in 11 days, I'm going to be 30. Yeah. And I can't tell you what a miracle it is to end this decade of my life with 8 years sober, with a program. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's truly a miracle. And I owe that completely to Alcoholics Anonymous and to all of you. So thank you.
Thank you, Emily.